I call to order the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for General Government. It is Thursday, February 9th, and good afternoon. Sorry for the short delay in getting underway, but our scheduled chairperson is involved in a conference call, and will be here as soon as she can. So we had to wait till we have a quorum on both sides, which we now have. So the agenda, Steve, you want to start things off for us on
Sure.
The first item?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and subcommittee members. You have three items on your agenda today. The first is a request from the State Treasurer for an adjustment to his budget. He is requesting that you increase his other funds expenditure limitation by $250,000. The Treasurer has received a grant from the Rockefeller Foundation of this amount. The purpose of this grant is to finance the designing and launching of a West Coast infrastructure exchange, and he is here for your requesting the budget adjustments that will allow him to spend the money that has been awarded to him.
Okay, thank you. And we'll, with that introduction, open the work session on the State Treasurer. Treasurer Wheeler, nice to see you. How's your time schedule now? I know that was a little bit of...
Oh, no, we're great.
You're great. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Co-Chair Garrard, Co-Chair Nathanson, for the record, my name's Ted Wheeler, State Treasurer. I have with me Chief of Staff Tom Reinhart. Some of you have heard this presentation, so I'll be a little briefer. We are asking, as Mr. Bender said, for the authorization to spend $250,000, which we've received in a grant from the Rockefeller Foundation. It is to further our efforts and our collaboration with the states of California and the state of Washington around ways to better fund infrastructure needs. As all of you are certainly aware, the state's 20-year infrastructure needs are immense. When you combine with that the state of California and the state of Washington, to Oregon's needs, our collective needs are in excess of $1 trillion. To that end, there's been a lot of discussion about how states might work more collaboratively around regionally significant investments. There has been a significant interest in this amongst our peers in the various states. To that end, Governor Kitzhaber convened a meeting in his office back in November where the leaders of all three states were brought into the room to discuss some of the opportunities. There was such momentum at the end of that meeting that the conversation continued into December at the National Association of State Treasurers meeting, where we ended up getting on the Rockefeller Foundation's radar. We are very interested in getting permission to look at how we could better work together and make this a reality. With that, I'll turn this over to my Chief of Staff, Tom Reinhart, who will give you some of the details, and we're certainly available to answer any questions you might have today. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Treasurer. Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Reinhart, Chief of Staff for the State Treasurer. The grant does three things. First, it funds four research items that I wanted to tell you about very briefly. First is researching the funding gaps in the municipal debt market and what that might do to states and local jurisdictions over the next 20 years. In other words, do we need alternative funding mechanisms? Second, California's pension system has created what's called a term sheet to attract investors that will promote domestic infrastructure products. So they've laid out what they will invest in and what they won't. We want some research on what would happen to the market if California, Washington, Oregon all had a similar term sheet. Could we drive more domestic infrastructure investment by putting more money into play? Third, we're interested in models for local governments on technical assistance. Wherever Ted travels in the state, he hears stories, and as I'm sure you do, of small cities and towns and counties that can't fund infrastructure, particularly between $10 and $25 million. Or we're interested around how we can do investment matchmaking or bridge some of the technical gaps that people have in terms of looking at projects. Number four, we also have policy questions. So what should states be asking? What should legislatures be asking collectively around what are the opportunities for domestic investing in infrastructure and how could they align better with their investment councils and boards? So a consultant's going to help us with those research questions to launch us. The grant also funds a manager to start building the collaboration. We're envisioning a nonprofit entity so that it will be separate from state government, but would help California, Washington, and Oregon build this collaboration and work on projects together. We've already had four other states express interest in this, so we think it'll grow pretty quickly. And lastly, the grant supports gatherings of policymakers and practitioners and fund managers to also share information and collaborate. In closing, I want to do a thank you to Dan Carroll from the governor's staff and Governor Kitzhaber for really being great partners on this work and helping us all along the way bring people together. And we look forward to the committee's approval of this request, and we'd like to keep you updated as you're interested as we go forward.
Colleagues, any questions? Let me, on the record, apologize for being late. I had to testify on another bill, and so I apologize. Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. Just one quick question. Obviously, the expense would be covered, the $250,000 expense would be covered with this Rockefeller grant. The projected costs for 2013 are $405,000. And it's actually, that's just my own sum that you it has, I assume, to be determined. Must be there must be other possible charges there. So, what would be the source of those funding?
Well, we have agreement right now for the Rockefeller Foundation to continue to bring foundations together. They have told us this is the first of a 3-year commitment that they are interested in making, but we would have to fundraise for the rest of that with our two state partners. So this first year is the authority to spend the money in the following ways that I've laid out with the $250,000 expenditure.
And the fundraise would be from other foundations then?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is borderline more like policy than the Ways and Means perspective, but it does speak to what kind of research will be conducted. Item number 3, which is local infrastructure. I assume that the research will also see what research has already been done through professional organizations such as public works officials, National Conference of State Legislators, that sort of thing. In other words, sometimes it's a survey of what's already been done rather than original research.
Co-Chair Nathanson, co-chairs, members of the committee. Yes, in the RFP that we've constructed, we have specifically said that there's a whole list of information that's already out there that we expect a consultant to glean before they come up with additional recommendations.
Follow-up? Thank you. So in addition to learning how to structure investment opportunities and how to make financing work, one of the things I hope to receive information on is what is the extent of our infrastructure problem and what is the nature of it. I suspect that we are facing a tsunami of failing systems because there was such enormous investment in sewer systems, water systems, roads, of course, gets the big attention. It's the stuff you don't see under the roads that often is in very bad and scary condition. And when you see that in California, natural gas lines failing and causing explosions. Will we also, as a result of this, find out a little bit more about the extent of our infrastructure condition?
Co-Chair Nathanson, co-chairs, thanks for the question. We actually discovered in this process that the American Society of Civil Engineers is redoing a national infrastructure report, and we are lucky and surprised to be this lucky that their incoming president, John DiLoreto, lives in Oregon. So we consulted with John about, really, we would like to work with him as he puts this report together on the detail that local jurisdictions need in terms of the scope of the problem. We couldn't agree more.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Senator Steiner-Hayward, I'm sorry.
Was this on this side of the table? Quite all right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to demonstrate my junior status here by asking a question that you all have probably answered other times. When I hear the word infrastructure, I think not only about what's already been mentioned by Representative Nathanson and you all in terms of physical things. I think about things like high-speed internet communications, things such as that. And the first part of my question is just to clarify, do you include things like that, the sort of not stuff you drive on or pass stuff through, physical things through, as part of infrastructure?
Co-chairs, Senator Steiner-Hayward, members of the committee, absolutely yes. Representative Nathanson correctly pointed out the crumbling infrastructure that was built decades ago in this nation that's a problem not only here in Oregon but elsewhere. But there's also the infrastructure of the future, which includes communications, it includes energy policies, it includes research and development capacity, and a whole host of other infrastructure needs. The purpose of this study isn't necessarily to identify exactly what those investment opportunities are, but to help us understand what information needs we need, what structure we need, what sort of financial underpinnings we need in terms of term sheets and other sorts of data that investors would need to be able to invest in the kinds of infrastructure that we would then collectively identify as priorities.
Follow.
Thank you. So one of the interesting pieces of being on very different committees, which I have been assigned to this session, is I'm hearing things. And in the Education and Workforce Development Policy Committee that I'm on, we were talking a lot about the educational service districts and the roles that they're playing in some of our communities, including in rural communities. And, for example, the ESD that serves Grant County and surrounding areas works very closely to help provide internet connectivity, high-speed internet connectivity for non-educational parts of the county, the airport, for example, in John Day. And I don't know if it's totally within the purview of your study, but I would hope that you would be talking with people in other parts of to think about ways that this is being done in non-traditional fashion. And you know, it is one of those places where we have that challenge. As you know, Mike Jordan's been talking to us a lot about programmatic things in different departments that people don't know are going on. So I'm taking advantage of being that connector, just to put that in your mind.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions, colleagues? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The related to Senator Steiner Hayward's question, and I hear us saying we don't want to be too explicatory in identifying each kind of element of infrastructure. It does seem, however, that defining the term, right, you know, what counts as infrastructure versus what's a house, right, you know, what's a efficient public building versus what's a smart grid, would be, might have been necessary to some degree for the grant, and congratulations, by the way, that's great. And it would be really interesting, and don't necessarily have to put that on the record in an oral report right now, but if there were a top 10 list of our guesses, even if like answer 9 or 10 or answer 11 was, we're not sure yet, maybe in 15 years other people will figure out stuff that we haven't already figured out. 25 years ago we probably weren't thinking about smart grids. But it would be helpful to understand some of the texture of that a little bit better, at least for me.
Representative Smith, co-chairs. Yes, this was an interesting and, how would I say this, a difficult conversation with our colleagues because the list could be so expansive.
Yeah.
We were all in agreement, however, in Governor Kitzhaber's office that, you know, the bread and butter, roads, bridges, energy transmission, communication systems, that stuff's there. There was some debate around energy efficiency.
Yeah.
That got included. We also are leaving it open in this RFP for the people that apply to also help us in terms of what do you see in the next 20 to 50 years the state should be looking at. So we hedged on that a little bit. But you know, your larger point is right on that the list is quite expansive.
Yeah.
And what we expect is the actual more solid information we'll get, like in the national surveys that Representative Nathanson referred to, will be the more bread and butter things. And then we'll have to keep working in the collaboration on what is actually financeable and doable in terms of what I would call the newer forms of infrastructure that people are considering now. Does that help? Does that help?
It is. And afterwards, if there's, you know, if there's some document or whatever, you know, I'll be sure to ask a staffer to read it.
Right.
Yeah. If I could take a step.
Actually, I'd like to see it too.
Yeah. Co-chairs and Representative Smith and members of the committee. But part of my interest in this is looking at alternative financing models. So the question of what gets financed is, I think, one step removed from what our immediate goal is, which is looking at the models. And it gets to Co-Chair Nathanson's question about, you know, are we going to look at successful models that are already out there? One of the goals here is to create a technical resource for local jurisdictions that could potentially latch onto our partnerships and the expertise we develop around new financing models. For example, you know, just to give you one illustration, it's very, very difficult for counties and municipal governments in the state of Oregon to finance certain types of small infrastructure project, and they come to the Treasury on a regular basis and say, hey, you guys work with global powerhouse investors in the private sector. Would they invest in our partnership? Well, the answer is usually no, because their infrastructure project is too small to even make sense for some of these global investors. So the question then becomes, could we do, for example, what Missouri did, where they bundled a number of similar infrastructure projects together and then were able, through a standardization of their term sheets, to then sell to private sector investments, private sector investors, the bonds to back those particular projects. So we're very interested not only in what it is we're financing, but I think more importantly right now is how do we finance it?
Well, I hear that, and my hunch, and I don't want to be humble about this hunch because you've been in it more, for more time and more deeply and have more expertise and intelligence to apply. But my hunch is, even in thinking about financing models, that will be related to the kind of thing you're financing, right? Because if you want to charge for a thing, charging on a road is way different than charging on an internet hub or or energy transmission. So you won't be. I don't think you'll be able to fully answer either of those questions without partially answering both.
Yeah, Representative Smith, co-chairs, members of the committee, absolutely, your revenue model is in large measure dependent upon what it is you're going to ultimately be financing. That's correct.
Thanks.
Representative Eric Brewer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I heard you mention about a nonprofit being set up, a separate entity. So we have another project of regional significance that's going on that's created a little bit of controversy. So we have some governance issues, some transparency issues, and no one understands what that entity is, still to be determined. So now when we're talking about a $250,000 grant, which sounds great on the face, and we hope that the funding continues through this, and I actually wish this approach was in place before this other regional significant project came around. What can you tell us about the transparency, the willingness of the state of Oregon for transparency, and our stake in the governance of it, and what that model looks like at this point?
Representative Brewer, co-chairs, thank you for the question. I want to emphasize, before the treasurer kicks me under the table, that we've had with our partners, I think, three meetings on this. So the charge in the RFP is for a consultant who's an expert in this arena to give us a recommendation on whether a nonprofit entity makes sense, what that would look like. I can assure you, because I've worked with the gentleman to my left long enough, that transparency would be high on the list in terms of whatever we do that would propose or be talking about an alternative policies around financing and investment. We'll be highly transparent, and we will assure you of that.
Follow-up. Thank you. This is probably more of a statement from this legislator's perspective, and what I'm hearing is that you are somewhat in agreement. I very much feel protective of the state of Oregon and that we not abdicate, one is our transparency of dollars and where they're going, and we don't abdicate our authority whatsoever in this and what in the work product that may come out of it. And I think that's some concerns that have happened in recent history, so I just want to relay that to you.
Thank you.
Following on that same theme, I guess I'd like to sound two cautionary notes. One of them is, in even looking at the title of this, the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange. For some of us on this panel, the last West Coast Governor's Initiative that we were involved in was the West Coast Governor's Initiative with respect to marine issues. And that, in its implementation, became so top-down that there was hardly any room in the bottom for Oregonians to make any comments. And so I would just suggest to you that you might want to look at that as a way not to go. My second cautionary tale is following on Representative Eric Brewer's comments, and that is the creation of the not-for-profit and the fact that you can shield all sorts of things inside a not-for-profit. Record requests can be denied. According to my good friends at the Energy Trust, you can only follow the spirit of the law, not the letter of the law. And so the creation of a 501c3 is not without some inherent risks, and I think there are some sterling examples of how not to do it. And I share Representative Eric Brewer's concerns about absolute transparency under the corporate structure of a 501c3.
Yes, Senator Johnson, co-chairs and members of the committee. Those are all very worthy and useful admonitions. And this is where I'll put my admonition out on the table as well, which is this is a very early phase discussion with potential partners. And I don't want to oversell or get anybody to come to the mistaken belief that we have actually reached a solution or an answer to addressing our significant infrastructure needs. This is truly an early stage conversation. We're blessed to have a foundation that's interested in this at the national level and is willing to foot the bill for some of the upfront research. We're hopeful and we're optimistic that this could lead to some better strategies for infrastructure investment, but there are no guarantees at this phase of the discussion that this will actually bear fruit. And I just want to be perfectly clear and transparent about that.
Representative Smith.
I just want to know what projects is my district going to get. That's what I in the grant.
The best ones, Representative.
Mr. Treasurer, I think when you prepare that report that you could report it for all of our districts. Give it to the professional staff and they'll disseminate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Any other comments for this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Bender, there is an LFO recommendation, and I think we have BAM as well. Could you give us your guidance?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends that you do approve the request, which is to include a $250,000 other funds expenditure limitation increase for state treasury operations in the 2012 session budget reconciliation bill for expenditures of grant funds received from the Rockefeller Foundation for the purpose of designing and launching a West Coast infrastructure exchange. If the subcommittee does approve this request, the item will then be included in the budget reconciliation bill. It will not come up as a separate matter in the full committee, but of course, when that bill is worked, members may have questions about that as they would any other item in that bill.
Colleagues, any? Do we want to hear from BAM or?
I don't believe that BAM is going to be presenting.
Okay. Great. Well, colleagues, you have heard the LFO recommendation. Any questions? Any discussion? I would entertain a motion to approve the LFO recommendation.
I move to do that.
Representative Nathanson has moved the LFO recommendation. Any objections? So ordered.
Thank you.
Okay, we need a carrier?
No, because...
I'm sorry, it's in the budget reconciliation bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so I will close the work session on the state treasurer, open a work session on the public employees retirement system. Welcome Ms. Byerly. Invite up Mr. Clary. And any of Team PERS that you would want to bring with?
Would you like me to say a couple of words?
I was going to wait till our guests were seated, and then I was going to invite your opening comments.
And they'll be very short.
Ms. Byerly.
The department is here today to report on a preliminary earnings crediting decision made by the board last month. They're required under statute to report to this body before they take final action in March.
Thank you very much. Mr. Clary, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Paul Clary, Executive Director of PERS, and with me is Steve Rodman, our Deputy Director. Again, this is an information report. We're here to report to you how the board has preliminarily credited approximately $1.2 billion in 2011 earnings. Those allocations, if adopted as final, would result in crediting earnings of 2.21%. to our benefit and forest reserve, our employer reserves, our Tier 2 member regular accounts, and our individual account program, our IAP accounts. 1.67% will go to the OPSERP pension reserve. OPSERP is a relatively new program, has a different cost structure around it, and it's a small fund, so the fixed costs drive the percentage crediting down a little bit. And then in the variable annuity program, and that's a portfolio that's invested solely in global equities, that was a negative 7.81% return. We also have to credit the current assumed earnings rate, which is 8%, to the Tier 1 member regular accounts. in doing that because the earnings were insufficient to credit 8%. We'll have a deficit of about $362 million that will go into our Tier 1 rate guarantee reserve. Since 2003 reforms, the Tier 1 members have to fund their own guarantees. So whenever we have earnings above 8%, we put that into the reserve. Whenever we have earnings less than 8%, we take that out of the reserve to make that crediting. Historically, we've got a chart in our presentation, we were down about $2 billion in that reserve in 2002. We fully recovered from that and built up to about a $2 billion surplus in 2007. That was probably when I should have left PERS. then we fell from there with the 2008 losses. We started recovering. And we've got a new deficit that we'll have to post there. Again, I think, you know, over time, we certainly anticipate recovering from that, but it is part of the 2003 reforms. We're scheduled to make our final crediting decision March 22nd, and as Ms. Byerly indicated, this is just an information report. We've got some charts and graphs that we shared with you. I'd point out that obviously our largest reserves are our benefit and force reserve. That's the reserve that we pay our pension roll out of, and our employer reserves. We've got a contingency reserve that now, after we're going to deploy about $200 million out of that cover the 2008 deficit in the rate guarantee reserve, we still will have about $535 million in that reserve. That's about 1% of the fund, and that's kind of an informal target that the board shoots for on that. And so with that, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer it.
Yes.
You're
thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. You're doing a wonderful job filling in. Thank you. So help me understand. I'm just looking at this chart. So a question I have. So when we had the Tier 1 rate guarantee reserve, and there's not sufficient funds in there, so we're negative $361.7 million, that's not just paper. I mean, that's really money. So how are we funding that for allocation right now? Where is it coming from?
Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Gerard, Representative Eric Brewer, that we will recover that money from earnings above 8% over the remaining life of these Tier 1 members. So are you looking at this chart? I'm not sure which
one. No, I'm looking at the one. It's a grid. I mean, it's a table.
Oh, it's a grid. Okay.
Table.
Yeah. So that's the negative reserve that we're posting into that $361 million. And if you'll go two pages further in your presentation, I think you'll see the history of that reserve. So you'll see when it was negative in 2001, and then dropped even further in 2002.
Actually, I don't think I have that.
I'm just looking at the PowerPoint.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm.
Oh, we've
at
got copies if you'd like.
Looking at the
yeah, he's. Nail other document. So maybe I'm looking at the wrong
at the end,
one.
She's looking at the table at the end, okay, of your, at the end,
yeah,
of your letter.
But yeah, then you don't have the history there. Yeah. So
but
over
still.
Time. So the history of it on this one chart, and I'll just give you mine.
Oh, I appreciate that. But over, if I might follow up. Just thank you, just to understand. Over time, that particular guarantee reserve, we hope, will net somewhere to zero at the
right.
end of the universe.
Right.
But now we're negative $361 million.
Right.
So do we have non-Tier 1 beneficiaries somehow subsidizing the Tier 1 account balances at this point?
Co-Chair Gerard, Representative Eric Brewer, no, we don't.
Okay.
This is a paper account, as you say, and so we'll keep track of this, post it as a deficit, and when we get earnings above 8, we'll wipe it out. So there's no direct subsidy. It doesn't impact the amount of money that's available to credit to the Tier 2 accounts or the IAP.
So in no way then are the non-Tier 1 beneficiaries subsidizing the Tier 1 economic loss?
co-chairs, Representative Eric Brewer, no, they're not.
Thank you. Right. That's a relief.
Right.
Thanks.
Senator Whitson.
It's on their backs, on the Tier 1 backs. Sorry.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I had a line of questioning along the same way, and but first, the first question is that the on your 2011 preliminary earnings crediting, pension obligation bonds are actually paid by general fund, right? Because they're not on this crediting.
Co-Chair Johnson, Senator Whitsitt, if you look on, are you looking on the grid chart?
Mr. Clary, would you just hold that question? Senator Whitsitt needs to excuse himself, and he will be right back.
Oh, okay.
I think the committee staff has come to get him.
Okay.
He'll be back. Any other questions?
I think our small crowd, Madam Chair, should understand we've probably just set a new legislative record for one committee meeting having three different co-chairs.
It makes it difficult when you're presenting.
Well, and then Nancy and I are beginning to trade seats, which will confuse you even more.
We could just give you permission to say co-chairs and not bother.
Co-chairs, right. And I can answer the senator's question offline, but for the benefit of the committee, the what we call the lump sum payment side accounts on that grid, that's where the pension obligation bond monies are deposited. And the debt service on the pension obligation bonds for the state is spread across the entire payroll, and I think about 35% of the payroll comes from the general fund, somewhere in that, yeah, and the rest comes from federal funds and other funds. So the debt service costs are that's how we service the POBs, pension obligation bonds.
What I actually am going to do is, unless LFO kicks me under the table, I'm going to exercise the prerogative of the chair, and I am going to not adjourn, but recess this presentation, take the next Department of Administrative Services as a courtesy to our colleague who is testifying. So with that, I am going to recess the work session on the Public Employees Retirement System, open a work session on the Department of Administrative Services, invite up Mr. West and Mr. Larson, and ask Ms. Byerly, who stays with us, to give us some opening comments as to this agenda item.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, Department of Administrative Services is here today to request an increase in other funds expenditure limitation. Back in 2009-11, there were lottery bonds issued to cover a series of local court projects. Not all of those projects were completed in that biennium, so the current biennium's budget already includes limitation to cover those projects, but it's not adequate. So this request would allow the department to finish those projects up, hopefully before the 2013 session, and they're here to talk to you about that.
Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brett West. I'm the Operations Division Administrator for the Department of Administrative Services. As Lori says, we are here to increase or request an increase in expenditure limitation. With me is Nick Larson, who is the project manager for these, and I will turn it over to Nick.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Johnson.
Good afternoon.
Of the subcommittee. My name is Nick Larson. I am a senior construction project manager with the Department of Administrative Services Facilities Division. My role has been that of program manager for the 32 individual House Bill 5054 projects authorized in the 2009 legislature. This limitation extension request we've made is neither brand new appropriation nor request for a new program. The request today is to obtain limitation to spend and manage the remaining cash account balance required to complete the House Bill 5054 projects. Let me provide just a brief bit of background and timeline. The original limitation from House Bill 5054 was authorized in June of 2009 and expired in June of 2011. At that time, we extended a portion of that limitation for another 2 years, but unknowingly failed to request all the limitation necessary to complete the projects because we didn't think we would need it. Through seasonal delays, hazardous materials discoveries in some of the facilities, and scope challenges during design, the project timelines were extended, and the limitation was not spent as projected in the 2009-2011 biennium. In fact, it was well short, as you can see. Prudently, upon discovering the shortage for the 11-13 biennium, we halted some of the projects immediately after design and prior to bid in order to avoid exceeding the legislatively authorized 11-13 amount. In order to finish those projects on hold and deal with the cash remaining in the bank, we are requesting this final authorization as indicated. I should also note here that besides being a slight economic boost in the affected cities and counties that we've worked in, this has achieved some much-needed improvements in the county courthouses for some of their deferred maintenance issues and some of the life safety issues as well. The feedback from both the Judicial Department court staff and the county facilities employees have been overwhelmingly positive in this program. In addition, and finally, through proper planning, scope refinement, and project management, we'll be returning about $1 to $1.5 million of cash for debt service or other use at the completion of the projects. Thank you for the consideration and time today. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. Larson, can you give us some numbers? I don't have anything in front of me as to what you're requesting to increase from what to where.
Co-Chair Johnson, Representative Girard, the request is for $1,994,150 from the original $11.2 million authorized in 09-11.
Ms. Barlow.
If I may clarify.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. In the current biennium in the DAS budget, there's $1.9 million already that was phased in the base for them to complete the projects. They need about $3.3 million. So the request is for the additional million some dollars. It's in that little table I put in the chart.
Okay.
I had to give you because I don't have it in front of me anymore.
Okay. And now she taketh away.
So they had $3.9 million in the current already. They need $3.9 million to complete the projects. They already had $1.9 million, and so we're going to add the difference, another $1.9 million. And the recommendation is to add the $1.9 million to bring them to the total amount. About $4 million is needed to complete the projects.
Okay.
Representative Air Brewer.
Thank you. So if I understand correctly, then the $1.9 million is a cost increase.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Air Brewer, no, it's not a cost increase. It's simply the original amount of the bonds didn't change. About $11 million were sold to cover projects. It's just that all those expenditures didn't happen in the first biennium. So this is just finishing up. So they only had they had authority to spend the full amount in 09-11, but they didn't complete, the projects were not completed. So the cash was still sitting there, left from the lottery bond proceeds, and now we're trying to spend the rest of it on the projects in 11-13.
Follow-up.
Thank you. So just to clarify then, so you're saying the full bonds were $11 million, and the costs were $11 million or less.
Actually going to be less, yes.
And we do not have any cost overruns. This is all just a timing issue.
Yes, Representative, it's timing.
It's a timing issue. And so if a follow-up then, what I'm seeing is lottery bond proceeds projected ending cash balance is $1.1 million. That is after full funding of the $3.9 million.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Brewer, yes, that's the expected amount that's going to still be available in proceeds after they complete the projects. The LFO recommendation is to not provide limitation for that amount at this time, to let the projects be completed, and then in the 2013 session, whatever truly is left, because some of these are still estimates, can be used to pay off debt service on those lottery bonds once we know the projects are completed. So there will be some excess cash that can be dealt with.
Thank you for that clarification.
I have some questions. One of them causes me to wonder about, you said scope challenges during design. I did a brief turn working for state government, and I've noticed that scope changes, and it always changes up. Tell us a little bit about the scope design that you've had.
Sure.
The changes. And then I've just been called to testify in another bill. So we're going to do magic chairman again.
Well, then we're going to be out of quorum.
No, he's on his way back because we're in the same committee.
Got it.
Co-Chair Johnson, members of the subcommittee.
A
good example of exactly what you're talking about is during design for the Polk County facility. One of the scope of the project is to install fire sprinklers in the building. It was discovered during design that there is not enough water pressure in their domestic water line to add fire sprinklers to the system. So then we have to trench out to the city main and grab another another line. So that's essentially what's happening.
Alex, I'll be back as fast as I can.
Are there any other questions? We can't do anything till one of the senators comes back. So,
should we?
I can
just
promise you that I have not been asked to testify on anything.
I was a couple of minutes late to get here.
Stand at ease.
Okay. Committee will stand at ease until we reach our quorum. In the committee with the addition of Senator Whitsitt, and we thank you.
Thank you.
And we now have a quorum. Is there, would our two, Mr. West, would you, and Mr. Larson, would you both come back up just in case there are any further questions from any of the committee members? Are there any further questions of this panel? And I know you've been caught a little short there, Senator Whitsitt, and you were not present.
We're talking about this.
We're talking about this one, yeah.
Yeah.
Long story short, they got all the money from the bond sale. They spent most of it, they could do in the 09-11 biennium, which is where they were supposed to have spent it. They had some delays in the structure of the project.
I think so.
There are no cost overruns. They just want authorization to spend money that they've already got. to finish it up, and they think they're going to come in under budget and have money left over to help with debt service.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
One other question.
Did I get it right?
Okay. Senator, what's it? I do. With final costs known during the session, the balance of the bond proceeds could be used instead of lottery funds to pay debt service. Does that mean you're going to amortize the debt service over 11 and 13?
If I could respond, Senator Whitsitt, the debt service schedule is already in place, and they're already paying. We're already using lottery funds to pay debt service on the bonds because they were lottery bonds that created the proceeds. So we'd simply replace the lottery. We would take, instead of using lottery, we could use the excess proceeds to make two or three of the payments, either in the 11-13 biennium at the end or in the 13-15 biennium.
So you are amortizing it essentially. you're using borrowed money. You're using borrowed money to pay the debt service.
It wasn't borrowed for that purpose, but
you are using borrowed money to pay the debt service.
Do you have another recommendation that we could do with it?
No, I was just asking a question. I wasn't attacking you. Oh, I was asking a question.
I didn't think you were attacking me. I thought maybe you had a good idea we need to consider.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions of Mr. West and Mr. Larson? Okay, seeing none, thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your return. Chair would entertain a motion.
Mr. Co-Chair, I would appreciate staff reviewing this language to see if I am doing the right process. I move to approve the request to increase other funds expenditure limitation by $3,087,658 to complete court facilities construction projects, but include...
Madam Co-Chair, could we...
Yes.
I mean, Mr. Co-Chair, can we back up a step? On the analysis before you, the first line is the request as the department proposed. The LFO recommendation is different, and that's in this next part. So if you could...
Start reading with number one rather than this.
Start with that.
I move to include the following budget adjustments in a budget reconciliation bill. Establish a new other funds expenditure limitation of $3,932,550 specifically for court facilities projects, and to decrease the agency's operations other funds expenditure limitation by $1,930,400.
Is there any discussion? Any objections? Motion is carried. It's my understanding we don't need a carrier, so.
No, Mr. Co-Chair, this will just be included in the budget reconciliation bill, as Mr. Bender indicated, with the Treasury item. So it will be in a big bill with a budget report where it will be detailed.
Very good. Then now we need to reconvene, if I'm correct here, reconvene the work session on the public employees retirement system. And Mr. Clary and Mr. Rodeman, if you'll return. And conclude, I guess, testimony.
Thank you, Co-Chair Gerard. Again, for the record, Paul Clary, Executive Director of PERS, and with me is Steve Rodeman, our Deputy Director. Senator Whitsitt, you had asked a question about where the pension obligation bond deposits are held and how they got credited, and also about the debt service on those.
Yes.
If you've got this chart in front of you, the grid chart, I think it's page 4 of our presentation. Mm-hmm.
It's going to get frequent blurred.
Second to last row, which is called the UAL lump sum payment side accounts. That's where the pension obligation bond proceeds sit. It shows various earnings rate to those because some of those over the years, we receive pension obligation bonds at different times during the year, mm-hmm. and proceeds, and we've got that crediting, so it varies from that. We may receive some this year. In terms of the debt service on the bonds, and I'll speak to the state's debt service because the local governments are all different and school districts. The state is servicing that debt via an assessment against payroll, and my understanding is about 35% of the state's payroll comes out of the general fund, and the remainder comes out of other funds and federal funds. Mm-hmm. So I think that If that was along the lines of what you were asking.
Yes, that answers that question.
Okay, thank you.
If I might ask another.
Follow-up, Senator Whitsitt.
On page 3, the contingency reserve remains balanced at about $535.3 million, which is 1% of the total PERS fund. Two questions regarding that. Is that amount actuarially adequate, a 1% contingency reserve? And secondly, if you continue on the same pathway in another 2.5 years, all of that contingency reserve would be gone because you used $200 million of it this year. On the same pathway, you would all be gone. Then what would happen?
Co-Chair Johnson, Senator Whitsitt, the contingency reserve is established whenever we have earnings. We can put money in it whenever we have earnings in excess of 8%. It's not used to insulate the fund from market ups and downs. We use the 20-year amortization period to do that. Its use was primarily to insulate us against potential litigation losses, and we just resolved 9 years worth of litigation. And because of that, when the board looked at the amount that was in there, they said, you know, some of the liabilities that we were fearful of have been taken care of, and so they felt comfortable deploying that down to that level. It's just an informal target. We hadn't deployed any money out of that reserve, Steve, in what, three, four years?
Yes.
And that we used it to liquidate that 2008 deficit because there's a statute that says we can't maintain a deficit for more than 5 years in the Tier 1 rate guarantee reserve. And, you know, in 13, we'd have been approaching that fifth year. So that's what we did with that. Steve, did you have anything else that, in terms of the contingency reserve? He's kind of my reserve expert.
For the record, Steve Rodman, Deputy Director at PERS. Chair Johnson and Senator Whitsitt, it is a one-time draw occasion because of the reasons that Mr. Cleary went. So it's not a track. It's not an ongoing allocation. The 1% fund value is just a benchmark that we've set out. It's not necessarily actuarially chosen. We were at about 1.5%. But as Mr. Cleary pointed out, with litigation, we're drawing that back down to 1.
Okay.
Follow-up.
One further question along the line was Representative Air Brewer was talking about. I'm going to go to page 4, Tier 1 Rate Guarantee Reserve, minus $361 million. I don't see how that is not a shift of money from the current people. I don't see how it's not a legacy cost. Now, you say it'll be repaid if and when this graph gets back positive again. If it doesn't get back positive again, there's no source of funding to get to repay it, so it's a shift. So currently, it would seem to me to be, explain me if I'm wrong, but it would seem to me that currently it is a shift from money being deposited from Tier 2 and OS, RP, and so forth for people to cover the legacy costs with the hope that the investment returns get up to the 8% or above so that you can refill that that fund.
Co-Chair Johnson, Senator Whitsitt, again, this is just a deficit on paper. And if you look at page 6, you'll see kind of the history of that reserve. It fluctuates with our earnings, and so
Question, Mr. Cleary, if it doesn't get back above zero, where does the money come to replace the money?
Senator Whitsitt, you know, we've got several sources, and you saw one of them that we did use for 2008. We used the transfer from the contingency reserve to fund that, right?
That would last 1 year. Okay, go ahead.
No, we don't anticipate staying down in this amount. As a matter of fact,
month. I understand your intent, but what if you do?
Again, over the 30-year history of the fund, we don't see these kind of returns that we had this year.
Thank you.
Anything else for this panel? I've been told that if I step outside and give the gavel to them one more time, we will have set a legislative record for gavel passing. I would also like to indicate for the record that close to the end of the hearing, our colleague, Dr. Hayward Steiner, was called away and is excused for the remainder of the meeting. Any other questions? Ms. Byerly.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, Legislative Fiscal Office recommends acknowledging receipt of the report.
Okay. Is there a motion to that effect?
I would make that motion.
Representative Girard moves the LFO report. Any questions? Any discussion?
We're just accepting the report. Right?
We're just accepting the report. That's correct, Ms. Byerly. I want to hear you say it on the record, too.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, the action is to accept receipt of the report. As Mr. Clary said, it's an informational report required by statute.
Okay. Any other questions? Any objection? So ordered. We need a carrier to full. Ms. Byerly?
Yes, we need a carrier, please.
Okay. Any volunteers? I'll do it. Oh, Representative Girard volunteers. That'll teach you to put your hand
don't
up.
Don't blink your eye.
All right, colleagues, with that, anything else? Representative Nathanson.
Yes, Madam Chair, I think today that you had the gavel at least three times. Representative Girard had the gavel twice. I had the gavel once. When I had it, I think I had an incomplete pass on the first down. And then I lost the time of possession statistic to Representative Girard. But we're just going to keep taking notes and see how it progresses through the rest of the session.
Well, considering that this session feels like the session on steroids, in all likelihood it could happen again. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you. We are adjourned. Thank you.